are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I'm the Walter White of half Latinos.
Be like, I'm the one who knocks and stuff. So I've been on a pretty nice high lately.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Confession, I've never seen 1 minute of that show.
Well, you're absolutely ridiculous, and I should honestly boo you out of here just for that alone.
I, like, race myself. I've changed a tire in 12 minutes. That's my record.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
So I just had a flat tire this week, and it took me 15 minutes.
Both,
so
you?
How about you?
It took me 12 minutes just to get the jack out of the trunk.
Well, that's not good.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to another episode of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Werner. You can reach me on Twitter, at Mike Werner, FWFB. And we are back for another prospect show, which means we have our lead prospect analyst, Matt Thompson, on. Matt, how's it going watching the semifinals of the World Baseball Classic?
Good, man. I always love Japanese and USA battling it out. We said this a million times, World Baseball Classic's been great. I'm excited to talk about outfield prospects today, though. So this will be a good show.
I agree. I've been probably the most excited for this episode just because the outfield is very, very deep. It's got a lot of talent. It's very exciting. I'd like it all around. So can't wait to get started for sure. Before we do that, we have to welcome in our other analyst to the program, which is Mr. Andy Anderson. Andy, hello.
How's it going, guys? What's up?
Nothing much. Just watching the WBC. I will say this. There's nothing that makes me feel less like a man than having a flat tire and taking about an hour and a half to be able to replace it.
So, I just had a flat tire this week, and it took me 15 minutes.
So
how about you?
I'm the opposite of a handyman. I felt like an absolute inept human being when trying to replace a tire. It was absolutely god-awful. I hope that nobody – there's a ton of cameras where I was actually doing this, and I hope to God that footage never goes out in public.
Mine was on the side of the interstate the other day, so that was fun. But I got it done because I'm a man.
I hope it's on YouTube. I like race myself. I've changed a tire in 12 minutes. That's my record.
Wow. Big
crew, NASCAR style, huh?
It took me 12 minutes just to get the jack out of the trunk.
that's not good.
Well, you're the good type of special, Mike.
And I've been on such a high lately, too, because I've been rewatching the series Breaking Bad. So I felt like such a badass just watching Walter White do his badass shit, you know, walk up to people's doors and be like, I'm the one who knocks and stuff. So I've been on a pretty nice high lately of feeling like really manly and really badass. And then all of a sudden my tire blows out and it takes me an hour and a half to get it done. So it really makes you humble really, really fast.
Confession, I've never seen 1 minute of that show.
Well, you're absolutely ridiculous, and I should honestly boo you out of here just for that alone.
Yeah, that's sin worthy. I mean, how did you get through the early 2010s without listening to any references from Breaking Bad or understanding any of them?
Sometimes you just don't care what people say. I don't know.
Oh, he's heard a million of them, and it's just right over his head.
Yeah,
he has no idea.
Yeah.
Well, you're just not as cool, Matt.
That's how I absorbed all this prospect knowledge during that time when you guys are watching this show.
Seriously, Matt, I'm being dead honest here. You need to watch the show. I think everybody that's listening to the show right now is saying that they think of you a little bit less than they did before because of this knowledge.
I'm surprised they even thought anything of me. But anyway, I like Dexter. That was my favorite show. Is it better than that?
Nothing wrong with Dexter. I will say that I've never watched a full season of it. I've seen like bits and pieces here and there. But I like it. I haven't been in love with it enough to really commit to watching the full series.
There's a few seasons of Dexter where you it's like crack, where you can't wait for the next episode. And there's a couple seasons where it's like, meh, this storyline kind of sucks. But when it's really good, that show is when it's going well, that show was the greatest ever. The ending sucked, but I won't spoil it.
You guys, I don't understand what's going on. You guys are intentionally making yourself look worse. Mike can't change tires. Matt's not seen Breaking Bad. Listen, viewers, if you want to picture me at all, I'm the manliest man that ever manned, all right? Just don't let me in with these two yahoos.
Hey, I can change a tire, so don't let me in with that.
Losers are more relatable, Andy. Losers are more relatable.
That's everyone likes a good comeback story, right?
That's yeah. Okay. Go ahead, Cinderellas.
I will say,
all right, shall we get started?
I don't know if you guys saw that. Well, Andy, more or less, they had like a Breaking Bad movie come out. Like somebody edited like a 2-hour movie of Breaking Bad that really just highlighted like every single big moment in the series, but it actually like flowed like an actual movie. It wasn't something that was like horribly done, but it was literally taken off after 2 days. The copyright laws just completely erased it from all the interwebs, and you can't find it anymore. But yeah, it was like a 2-day awesome fiesta just based on having a 2-hour movie that really highlighted everything. It was actually pretty nice.
Yeah, you can't do that on the internet.
Yeah, it's bad, but why don't we toss a prospect instead of
yeah, let's do that.
All these series and such. Again, please rate and review the show. You can go on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, any of the podcast aggregators. Really helps us out. Please keep pumping out the reviews. It's been really, really beneficial to us, and we want to keep doing the show for free, so please help us out there. Please reach all of us on Twitter, at MDTomp, FWFB for Matt, at A. Anderson, FWFB for Andy, and again, at Mike Werner, FWFB for me. All right, let's get this started. So we are going to go through our top 20 outfield list. We did that with starting pitchers, so we're going to do the same thing with outfield since it's a deep position. We're going to go 20 through 11 and then 10 through 1 like we also did with starting pitchers. We'll also highlight one honorable mention this episode and then dive a little bit deeper next week. So you'll have a little longer show as well. Let's just get this started. So number 20 for everybody. I'll try and keep track of this a little bit better than I have in the weeks past as well, because it's starting to get a little outrageous. Every once in a while, I'll like listen back to what we do, and I'm like, I really need to keep track of this stuff better. So anyways, Andy, who's your number 20 guy?
Ronald Acuna at number 20.
Wow. I know Matt and I are going to disagree with this. Matt, who do you have at number 20?
My number 20 is Mickey Moniak.
All right, and I actually have Moniak right outside of my top 20. My number 20 guy is Jesse Winker. I'm going to save Acuna because I know for a fact Matt is going to have him on next week, and I will as well. Yep. So we're going to kind of just stash Acuna for next week, and we'll leave it at that. Let's do talk about Moniak, though. Andy, where do you have Mickey Moniak on your list?
I have Moniak within my 20 to 11. I have him 17 on my list.
Nice.
Okay, so we'll talk about some Moniak real fast. Matt, why don't you give us a... Yeah, brief synopsis on Moniak. I know he was the first overall pick this year, but what can we expect from a fantasy outlook moving forward, and how long might it take for him to reach the majors?
Sure, that's the drag here. The downside with Moniak is it's going to take every bit of 3, maybe 4 years for him to get there. But when he does get there, he's been comped to players like Christian Yelich or Steve Finley. And it shows a little bit of the intriguing power and speed combination that he has. Left-handed swinger, he has a plus hit tool now. He's going to flirt with 300 batting averages in down the road and probably add 15 homers, 15 steals, which is a hell of a player. This offseason, I guess the Phillies focused on him building mass and adding good muscle mass. So maybe the home runs stick up to 20, maybe even 25. Who knows? The swing is great. So it's possible they do with some added strength. But the thing with Moniak is he doesn't have the explosiveness that you want in a number one overall pick, but he's about as safe as a high school hitter can get. He's going to cost you a high pick in this year in Dynasty Drafts to get him, but it's probably not worth the high price you're going to have to pay. I think if you know he's got the tag of going number one overall, but he really wasn't the top player in the draft, and judging and looking at the Phillies' draft plan, they don't think he was either. They kind of use him to fit into their budget plans. But if you're going to wait 3 or 4 years, he's going to be a nice player for you. The 300 averages with a healthy OBP and 15 to 20 homers and steals doesn't sound as exciting. But in a dynasty format, that's an easy top 20 outfielder long term, if not higher than that. If he hit the 300 mark, if he hits about 280 mark, he's still probably a top 20 guy. So it's insanely valuable. The ceiling isn't all that high. I don't think he's that much different than an Andrew Benintendi, but he's just 3-4 years away. And a nice added bonus, there's been a lot of studies done. He was one of the youngest players in his draft class, and there's always a high success rate with guys like that. So got to be patient, but I have Moniak at 20.
Andy, thoughts on Moniak?
It's especially with high schoolers, it's hard to see the trajectory. But one of the reasons I like Moniak so much is because he's actually unsexy. I think a lot of times, especially with first overall picks, you know, they go for the enormous upside. And that's never wrong. That's never the wrong decision. But especially where the Phillies are right now, where they cannot they cannot do well. My Philly friends are listening right now and they're disagreeing, and I could just tell them they're wrong. The Phillies are in trouble and they need guys that are producers and unsexy producers at that. Moniak, great lefty swing, is probably above average when it comes to average speed and defense. I'd like to see the power progress a little bit more. I know he was, like Matt said, I know he was stressing to put on weight. I do think he can be a one or a two hitter, and hitting 15 to 20 home runs at his peak will probably be what you get, but the average is going to be nice. The steals and the on base is going to really push him into that, like Matt said, top 20 overall outfielder.
Really nice player for me. I like him a lot. I have him just outside my top 20. I have no problems with Moniak at all. I just think it's going to take some time, and based on the fact that his upside isn't extreme, I'm willing to kind of forego any draft shares, at least right now, to maybe pick a guy that's a little bit closer to the major leagues. So no problems with Moniak, but I'm still willing to wait and, you know, kind of see what happens with him long term. Let's talk about Jesse Winker a little bit. Where do you guys have him on y'all's list, Andy?
I have him at number 13.
Number 13. How about you, Matt?
I know we're not ranking it like this, but he would be number 22 if I was to go stretch my list out a little bit.
Okay.
And so what else? He's close enough. So
why at number 22, Matt?
He's a lot of projection despite being in AAA. I like the profile. I've never really been a huge fan, though. I'll admit that, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't be. Plus hit tool. Some even have it double plus. Obviously, the plus hit tool is strong enough to play as it is. But to go with that, he has plus plate skills and his batting eye, which lets his plus hit tool play up even more. So he's an OBP league monster. So keep that in mind if you play in formats like that. The thing that knocks him down for me a little bit is the lack of present power and speed. He's going to be nothing on the bases, which is fine, because I think when the power does come, I think he's a 20 home run bat. Right now, he hasn't showed that. He's battled some shoulder injuries a little bit, and I think he'll be fine over that. He's in AAA now, but I think he's remarkably far away from his ceiling, even though he's in AAA, if that makes any sense, because he needs to get healthier, build up the strength. He's not really an asset in defense. He has left field only profile in the outfield. I know it doesn't really matter too much in some leagues, but some leagues have those weird rules to make you play left field, center field, right field. And he's actually more valuable in that league then, because left fielders are really scarce if you need that. So I'm in a league like that, unfortunately. And the left field is really hard to find, surprisingly. But I think the power is coming, like I said. He's a nice buy low guy, because if people look at the stat line, they're going to see it. But if you have him, I advise selling him, or not selling him, I advise holding. I know this doesn't sound like the most exciting comp, but I think he's Nick Markakis 2.0, Baltimore version, which is actually a pretty nice player, a lot of doubles. I think that's him, and I think he's in Cincinnati this year. Like I said, lots of extra base hits, doubles mostly, and strong batting averages in his future. Good OBPs.
Agreed on the proximity. He's certainly going to be up with the club, probably right after the Super 2 deadline. And I love the home ballpark for him. Great American Park is an awesome place to hit. It's one of the best in the National League. I think the left-handed stroke of his should, you know, yield to more than average home run output. We'll see. He has gotten a ton of spring training at bats, which I've loved. I've really gotten to see him up close and personal this spring. He still strikes out a little bit too much right now, and even though the minor leagues last season he did a really good job of making contact, it really comes down to how he's going to do in the majors. And I agree, I don't think that he is ready to fulfill his full potential quite yet, but he is very close. I think he has enough power to hit 15 to 20 home runs. I do think the plate skills are great and good enough to give him a good solid batting average floor as well. So, again, a really nice profile. I don't like the speed at all, which you already mentioned as well, Matt. So, really solid profile. I think he's like more of an outfielder 5 in mixed formats. Probably more an outfielder 4 and deeper mixed. Maybe like the 15 to 20 team leagues. He's probably more of an outfielder 4 there. But I do think he's going to be a solid outfielder for the next, you know, 4 to 6 years, depending on how well his profile shakes out. He might end up being a guy that shoots up in terms of power later on as he grows a bit, but he also might be a guy that stays stagnant as well. Nick Markakis is a pretty good comp. I like that a pretty good bit. Andy, what are your thoughts on Jesse Winker?
Well, I might be wrong in saying this, but I think Markakis was hitting a high 20 home runs in his best. And I don't think Rinker can ever get there, especially after the injury in 2014. The thing, and Matt touched on this a little bit about Winker, 59 walks last year. Anyone, any of our listeners know? 59 strikeouts last year.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing about him.
Those numbers are high.
It's sexy when it's one walks and strikeouts is always sexy.
This is a kid that will get on base, and I think that's what Cincinnati wants. They want people to get on base. So like Matt said, we'll be up past Super 2. Completely agree with that. I don't personally see the 20 to 25 home runs you guys are saying.
I don't either. I think low 20s for me.
I really even think 18, 20 is probably the ceiling. Maybe that changes with, you know, development and pitch recognition, stuff like that. But he's going to get on base. He's shown he can do that. And that's why I like him. And proximity got him that 13 spot for me.
I think that the power could boost up more because guys that have exceptional plate skills like Winker have the knack for being able to hit the ball farther as they grow a bit and they get used to major league pitching, a la Kevin Kiermaier, for instance. Kevin Kiermaier never was a guy with power in the minor leagues, and then all of a sudden he became a 20 home run guy out of the blue just because his pull power got a lot better because his hit tool is strong. I think that it's even more exceptional for somebody like Winker. On a side note, I do want to say Nick Markakis, his career high in home runs for a single season was 23 back in 2007.
Yeah, I love that comp.
Yeah, I think that's pretty solid. Yeah. I do think that Winker can walk at a much better rate than Markakis, but I think the contact won't be as good because Markakis has been a career 85% contact rate guy. I think Winker will probably have a little bit lower contact rate than that. But again, really solid plate skills. Power has room to grow. It might not be above average, but it's going to be somewhere in the mid pack. And I do like the home ballpark. There's a lot to like with Winker.
Like I said, too, in OBP formats, you gotta raise him up a little bit, and the plate skills are gonna make his offensive skills play up. So,
agreed. He hasn't had less than a 13% walk rate at any stop in the minor leagues. He's been.
I think that's impressive.
Why he's been highly touted for so long because the plate skills have been so good. Mainly the on base percentage skills. I mean, being able to take a walk in the minor leagues and being able to consistently do that is really an indicator that you know what you're seeing as far as at the plate. And even when you get up to the AA, AAA range, if you're able to recognize what type of pitches are coming in and lay off of them, that's an exceptional skill to have. So,
I've seen him much higher on different people's lists.
So have I. I think that this is fairly low, but I think that also is implementing the fantasy aspect here. Because from a fantasy angle, especially if he's like a 6-7 hitter, and with the Reds, because they have other lineup options like Dilson Herrera, Jose Peraza, that they could hit up top. Even though Peraza is not a guy that walks, they could hit him at the top of the lineup because he has really good bat-to-ball skills. I mean, there's just a ton of options in front of Winker that I think could end up getting a higher spot in the lineup at some point.
And he has a really long neck, too, Winker, just so you know.
Like a brontosaurus neck or like a giraffe?
No, it's like a giraffe, but it's thicker, but it's really long. It's like his neck from the base of it to his bottom of his chin is about the same size as his head, so it's pretty long.
Remember last week with the small UCL, you know, it's not the size, it's what you do with it, friends.
Let's move on from Winker. Number 19, I have Harrison Bader at number 19, a guy that I've loved for a long time. Matt, who do you have at 19?
Blake Rutherford.
How about you, Andy? Who you have at 19?
I have Lodi at 19.
All right, this is interesting.
Lodi Taveras?
Yes.
I love that guy.
I have him in the back half of my top 20. How about you, Matt?
Taveras is going to be... Yeah, he's number 24 over for me.
Okay, let's talk about Leody Taveras then, since he's kind of in the same range here. Andy, why are you in love with Leody Taveras?
Well, I mean, barely got to know him. Should buy me a drink first.
Only 17, so I better watch out.
Wouldn't be the first time that a 17-year-old bought a drink for Andy.
Hey, it's legal in the Dominican Republic.
We're officially off the air. Thank you, everybody, for listening for about 2 years, and we will see you never.
I'm just kidding. He's 18 now, so you're fine.
There we go.
It's not fun.
It's legal in the blue states.
I'm out of this conversation.
Okay. All right. Well, the reason I like him is because 6'1", tall, athletic, Very lean, so he's quick. Really good defender, which I know we're going to keep saying doesn't mean anything for fantasy, but it means that he does have a future spot. Switch hitter and hits hard from both sides. Watching him is a lot of fun. It's a killer swing, but it also is smooth. It needs to get polished, though. It's raw, but what can you expect from an 18-year-old? I'd like to see him beef up a little bit more and get some power, which could lead to that 25-30 home run range, which would be really cool. But again, so far away, we need to see a little bit more games. I like the system. I like Texas. You know, hitting in that ballpark is not akin to hitting in Colorado, but it's similar. Yeah, that's basic. That's all I got to say. he's fun to watch. He's an explosive player, and he's fun to watch.
Yeah, he's all projection, and I think that he's getting a little bit more hype right now than I like. I would definitely like to keep his value at a low cost because he's somebody that I certainly think you can wait on. This is a prime example of somebody that, while he's the same age or about the same age as Mickey Moniak, the fantasy ceiling is tremendously higher, and I'm willing to take the bet on Tavares more so than somebody like Moniak. Even though I think Moniak might be a little bit safer in reaching the ceiling, there's a lot to like with Tavares. I think that he could be a 2020 guy, maybe even higher, depending on how things shake out. Texas has a long-running way of being able to get their prospect, especially their hitting prospects, in check and being able to be successful with them. Some of them don't always pan out, but somebody like Nomar Mazara has already, you know, grown leaps and bounds in a very short amount of time. I think we could see the same ascension from somebody like Tavares as well. I really like the kid. I have him up at number 15 on my list, and I think it's warranted based on the possible upside for fantasy. Matt, I know you're in love with Tavares, so tell us about him.
Yeah, I ranked him lower than all you guys, but I still like him a lot. I mean, what he did last year, I think he had one of the most untalked about impressive seasons of any minor leaguer in 2016. I say that because at 17 years old, which was his first pro year, he went all the way from the DSL through the Arizona Rookie League, ended up playing with college grads in the Northwest League who were 4 years older than him, and he still was able to do more than hold his own, show off some of the skills he's got there.
He had 228. I mean, it's not like he...
No, but he held his own defensively and on the bases and everything. Plus speed, obviously a threat to steal any time. Good instincts and stolen base totals are going to take off after he gets more refined. He's a little rough around. He's extremely raw. Switch hitter projects to have an above average hit tool. Line drives everywhere and anywhere. Needs to work on pitch recognition and his defensive reads in center, but he's only 18, so, I mean, that's going to come. Mike, you're higher than me on the power. I have him kind of maxing out about the 12 to 15 homer range just because I think the frame is – I don't think he's going to fill out as much and add a lot of strength because I think the speed is part of his game. You remember Willie Tavares, the outfielder for, like, the Reds and the Rockies?
Love that guy.
That's actually his cousin or something like that, cousin or uncle or something like that. So he's kind of fits that mold with a little speed, glove action.
Yeah, I think I misspoke earlier when I said 20 to 25. I might have said home runs and I meant steals. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. It's just your opinion, man. It doesn't mean you're wrong. We'll find out in about 6 years with this guy.
Yeah, exactly. Six years.
No, I mean, Texas has a really good, really, really good job of, they do one of the best
good
jobs
track
of
record.
Developing talent from Latin America. Yeah. And I mean, he's still really far away, but like you said, the ceiling is higher than someone like Moniak. But in deeper leagues, you want to pay for the safety that Moniak provides you. But in a shallower format, I think you can go for the gold here and try to get Tavares. You know, does that make sense? I mean, he's got potential to have all five tools, and he could be a stud.
Yeah, absolutely. He's one of the more toolsier, lower-level guys that I can think of. Let's talk about another toolsy young guy, which is Blake Rutherford, just drafted this year. I wanted the Rays to take him very, very badly. I'm actually still very upset that the Rays didn't nab him in the first round. But nonetheless, he ends up going to the Yankees. And, you know, when you look at the fact that he has great pull power, he's a lefty, and he's going to possibly be playing in Yankee Stadium, that could equate to really high upside for fantasy. It's going to take a couple years for him to get there, but I do love the profile. I think that he can hit for a fairly strong batting average. Not anything great, but I think 270-ish is something that's in the cards for him. he could make a nice leap in home runs this year as well with a full season. I think Rutherford is the type of guy that could either spike really high this year in prospect ranks, or he might stay stagnant if he doesn't have a great year in his first full season in the minor league. So we'll have to kind of stay tuned with somebody like Rutherford. But I have him right now outside of my top 20. I have him at 21 if we were looking at it that way. And it doesn't mean I'm not excited about him. I just think that he's the type of guy that's either going to spike really high this year or he's going to stay kind of stagnant, which is what I would rather have happen, because I can probably buy him for a lesser cost than what he's currently going right now. Andy, do you have any thoughts on Rutherford?
Well, I just want to say he is going to have the spotlight on him this year. You know, this is the first time in a long time that I can remember that the Yankees farm system is really good and has a lot of talent. And because of that, they are going to draw a lot of eyes. So I do think an average year will probably be better for him and his value, but people are going to be saying, oh, lefty power, you know, hitting to left field needs to do that. And you know, these baby bombers, they are for real. They are good, but sometimes they can't handle the spotlight. You know, Zach Greinke, the reason he won't ever pitch in New York is because he has the mental stability of a post office worker. And some guys just can't handle that. So it will be a maturing moment for him. I will like to see him. Definitely, as a Yankee fan, I am super pumped about these kids. But he does have the ability to be really great at 18, 19, you know, 19 more, obviously. But I like him a lot. He is outside my top 20 because of the not proximity, where I have someone who like Judge, who's much higher. But I'm sure we'll get to him later. I do think 270, 275 is where he will be. But Yankee Stadium plays crazily. So we could see a decent amount of home runs follow.
Adam Jones continues to be the absolute USA star. Just continues to get, you know, awesome hits in amazing spots. He also is like an absolute superhero making catches in center field. Sorry, still doing play-by-play analysis here on the WBC. But
I missed it because I was giving such in-depth, great analysis on Rutherford.
I mean, something that you didn't touch on, Rutherford, is his frame is already really solid. Yeah. You know, he's already close to 200 pounds.
6'3", 200 pounds. It's a good body from a 19-year-old, yeah.
Yeah, just fresh out of high school, essentially. Like, I think that that's really solid. And if he continues that trajectory, we could be seeing a really nice 30-home-run-plus guy, yeah, especially with the home ballpark. So a lot to like with Rutherford. Matt, what's your thoughts on Blake Rutherford, the should-have-been Ray?
I just didn't want to spend that money, man. That $3.2 million bonus was too much for him, I guess.
I knew in my mind that would happen, but...
Yeah, it's fine. The thing with Rutherford, and I hate this as a knock on him, because remember how I talked about how Moniak was one of the youngest in his draft class? Rutherford is 11 days shy of being a full year older than Moniak. He was 19 when he was drafted. I don't care about that, because it's such a
small range,
but that's kind of one of the reasons why he got knocked a little bit pre-draft. I think that was people just trying to make him fall because they wanted him. Keith Law, if you follow his stuff, which you should, is really high on Rutherford. Had him in his, I don't want to give it to pay site, but he was in his top 25 for prospects in all of baseball, not fantasy, but in all of baseball as just being drafted. So, I mean, that's high enough praise as it is there. Seen a lot of good comps on Rutherford. My favorite two, Grady Sizemore and Jim Edmonds. So that gives you kind of an idea of.
He's not that good defensively, though, is he?
Yeah, that was going to say.
An offensive point of view.
Grady
Sizemore,
didn't he have 30-30 seasons, if I'm not mistaken?
He's Rutherford's not going to do that, but from the left-handed power.
Just say 30 home runs, okay? Jeez.
Yeah, well, he can hit more than 30 in the ballpark.
What are you, an idiot?
Smooth left-handed swing. Everyone loves a hard contact. That's the one thing that stood out with Rutherford, hard contact. Even when he was playing AAU and Team USA 18 and under ball, he was constantly hitting the ball harder than most from everything I've read. Play skills are outstanding, like I said. Speed is average. It plays up because he gets excellent jumps on the bases. He's not going to be a stolen base guy at all, though. He didn't even have any steals in his brief 33-game cameo after signing, but hit tool and power are good enough, so don't even worry about the speed. It's going to be a nice four-category contributor in Yankee Stadium, and he's easily going to hit 25 to 30 homers in that ballpark with that short right field porch. So you have to pay up to get Rutherford this year, and I'm not opposed to doing that.
Yeah, it's an exciting time for me as a Yankee fan. We've been paying our dues for a long time, suffering, you know, not winning as much as we should. So now it's time to
sorry for you.
Puke.
How about Harrison Bader? Where do you guys have Harrison Bader on your list, if at all?
He's the 27th guy for me.
He is not on my list.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, I'll talk about Harrison Bader then.
Yeah, please do.
I will say I loved what he's done this spring. He's looked, I mean, obviously it's a small sample, but Cardinals are giving him all the at-bats that he can handle, and he's really great. In Double-A last year, he was phenomenal, and in Triple-A, he struggled. But the overall slash line was still really nice across the level, and he showed the power and speed, 19 homers, 13 steals. He can play center field. He's probably a little bit stretched there. He probably fits better in the corner. But he average tools across the board, no real glaring weakness. Struggled a little bit against righties, but I think that was kind of a fluke. He did kill lefties, so you got to play that both ways. Very good defensive outfielder, like I said, in all three spots. He's really aggressive, but he's inefficient on the bases. He needs to tighten up the jumps and all that stuff. He's going to be up this year. Just a matter of when. I think he's a perfect number two hitter for me, long term. Just because, watching him hit this spring, I love the bat path. It's so level through the zone. He is got such an efficient short, quick stroke that he tore up the SEC, and the SEC is the best conference in all of professional baseball or collegiate baseball. Excuse me. You know, guys like Dansby Swanson and Alex Bregman and Tim Tebow and David Price are all, I couldn't even say that, keeping a straight face. But all those guys are big SEC guys, and anytime you hear that, it's automatically good. He translated the college success over to pro ball. He's been a fast riser. I like Bader a lot. I'm a little bit worried that with the Cardinals' outfield as it's currently constructed, they have a young core in their outfield, and it's they're all getting paid or about to get paid. And I just think Bader is going to be at least a fourth outfielder for the next couple seasons. Always trade bait, but I still like him long term. I think you're higher on him than I am, Mike. I think you have a higher ceiling for him, but I think he can be a 20 homer, 15 steal guy if he gets enough time. It's all going to be batting average dependent though, because he does swing and miss a little bit.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why he was off my list. Is I think he's got a decent ceiling, but a pretty good floor. Like you said, the reasons why a guy like Wayne won over Bader was because we saw Winker struggle a little bit and then come back, you know, control his swing a little bit more, and he was then able to turn it around. I'd like to see that sort of transition, that sort of maturing level from Bader who did struggle, and I'd like to see him maybe take that next step. 231's not what we like to see in AAA, but he's in a good system. Cardinals do well with outfielders except for when they die. So
that wasn't funny.
Oh man!
I'm just kidding.
No, hey man, I love Tavares, and when I had him on so many of my teams, and when he passed away, I was so upset. But anyway, I lost a ton of viewers there too. Well, I'm doing real well today. I started off hot. I mean, I'm getting even hotter. But like I said, for Harrison Bader, the ceiling's not so high. The floor is where you get. The floor is about where you want a 15 to 20 home run steals guy.
Yeah, I'm definitely higher. I think that he's mature. I like his approach at the plate. No, he didn't have a good bout at AAA last year, and I completely understand being hesitant on somebody that made it to AAA and struggled. But at the same time, it was only 147 at-bats, and he's been somebody across the minor leagues to this point. 200-plus ISOs across the board, been able to show that he can steal double-digit bases. I will add that he was caught 13 times last year, even though he had 13 steals. So that's certainly something to worry about, and maybe the Cardinals won't steal him as much once he gets up to the majors, but he's solid enough defensively to be a full-time player. I definitely think that there's 20 home runs in the bat. I definitely think that he can steal double-digit bases, and I think the batting average is fine as well. He's had 360-plus BABIPs almost across the board as well throughout the minor leagues. He's somebody that I think, even though he had bad contact rates last year, he usually had a 79 to 80-plus percent contact rate the years prior, and I think that he can sit around that point, 20 20-ish strikeout percentage per year, I think, is about right for him. And if he does that, then he'll hit for a good batting average. And, you know, in fantasy, when we're looking for batting average, runs scored on a pretty decent lineup, home runs and steals, I mean, that's a four-category guy in itself. And you could also get five if things worked out any given year. I think that Bader is a safe guy to make the major leagues, safe guy to perform once he makes it to the major leagues itself, and will be a pretty safe fantasy commodity as well. I'll go as far as to say he could be a higher draft pick in fantasy than Stephen Piscotty in 3 years. That's how high I think of Bader.
If the stolen base efficiency grows, I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that will come with age and getting a little bit more attention. If that's something he wants to build on, he certainly can. But my next question was going to be, what year do you think he come up? You think he makes an appearance this year?
Oh, he comes up this year.
Second half this year.
I know spring training at stats don't mean anything, but I do like to factor in like the at-bat totals. Harrison Bader actually leads the Cardinals in at-bats this spring. I think that's worth something, right? I mean, because they know he's
very
close.
Similar to Winker. Winker and Bader have about the same amount of at-bats. They played in a ton of games as well. Now, Bader is hitting .310 thus far in spring, but what I don't like is that he has 9 strikeouts and 2 walks. If it was more of the, 4 walks and 6 strikeout area, something like that, then I would feel a little bit more comfortable. But at the same time, you look at the fact that he has a double, a triple, and 2 home runs in 13 hits. I mean, I think that's a pretty good ratio as well. And that's part of it.
You have to give him a little bump, right? Because the organization, I mean, they do really, really well with college bats. Does that factor in your ranking at all? Or do you look past that and just kind of go for a raw player?
Not just the college bats, just in general, they've had a pretty good track record and success rate with hitters in general.
His numbers are actually not that far off from what Stephen Piscotty was doing in the minor leagues.
Yeah, and who's to say that the Cardinals won't make some adjustments with him? And that's what I think. That's what I think people forget about. When you look at the organizations, they might not do any type of meaningful adjustments to their minor league players until they hit a certain point. And then once they're almost major league ready, that might be where they make the substantial changes to somebody's either swing path or the way that they go about stealing bases or their approach in terms of stealing bases. Or, for pitchers, maybe a switch up in their mechanics, a switch up in their repertoire. I mean, there's a lot of different things and aspects that teams do with their prospects once they hit a certain point that I think it's a little bit forgotten when you look at some of these players. And once again, like Bader has shown and throughout the minor leagues that he can hit for above 15 home runs and can also steal bases. Mind you, the caught stealing rate is certainly a problem, but once again, I think the hit tool is good enough, and I think the power is already good enough to be a fantasy asset. And I think if he steals bases, he could be a not top tier fantasy asset, but like mid to top tier, like fifth to eighth or ninth round type guy at his peak.
A little glimpse of what Bader's junior year in college, his last year at University of Florida, he hit 17 home runs in 67 games. So you're talking about a guy that really does have true power. It's just he needs to – I'd like it to take another step forward this year. Hopefully it does because the Cardinals have a lot of pitcher-friendly ballparks in the lower levels of the minors, and AAA Memphis kind of plays neutral, and it's in the PCL. So when he goes out on the road, he's in all these big offensive parks. So I look for him to have a really nice season this year numbers-wise. So maybe that'll boost up his trade value at very worst-case scenario.
And from an OBP perspective, he's not – the type of guy that's going to kill you either. He doesn't walk an exceptional amount. He's not like a 10%+ walk guy, but he is a 7% or so walk guy, and that's going to yield to somewhere in the vicinity of 330, 340 on base percentages. Sorry, Andy, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, Matt, who do you like more for St. Louis, Bader or Sierra?
From a fantasy baseball standpoint, I'll take Bader. But if I was actually wanting like my real team to do well, I'd want Sierra because he's so good in center field. But.
All right, so no, I was just wondering because I have Sierra ranked over Bader as well, just because of that defense is monstrous.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah, they're not too far off from each other. I'll go Bader from a fantasy realm though, but it's close.
All right, let's move on to number 18. Number 18 for you, Andy, is
I have Lewis at 18.
Which Lewis? Kyle Lewis?
Kyle Lewis, yes.
How about you, Matt?
Alex Verdugo.
I have Alex Verdugo at 17, so let's hit on him.
Talk about him, yeah.
How about you, Matt? We'll start off with you on Alex Verdugo, the Dodgers prospect.
Well, admittedly, the guys on the RotoWire podcast were talking about him like this, and if you look at a picture of Verdugo, he looks like the guy on this list that's most likely to sell you a bag of shitty weed. He kind of has that look to him. I don't know what that means.
Why is that to be shitty? Like,
it just does. Just
about his face makes it seem like he's going to sell substandard cannabis? I don't get it.
He just looks like the guy down the street that you know that does that. I'll just say
I really feel bad for you. If you're buying bad weed, I can hook you up, man.
No, I wish. I get drug tested too much in my job. But Verdugo, he's one of the most polarizing players in the minors because if you just look at what he did as a pure stat line, a 113 WRC plus doesn't – it's good, but it doesn't, like, jump off the page at you for the Texas League or anything like that. But then when you add in the fact that Verdugo is 3.5 years younger than the average hitter in the Texas League, then that really puts it into perspective of what he's doing. Only 20 years old, he hit 13 homers in 2016. I think it'll take some time, but I think 20 and maybe even 25 homers are realistic for him. The hit tool is the strongest tool in his toolbox, though. High batting averages are going to be there. Arm and defensive skills are going to allow him to play anywhere in the outfield. Center field is where his predictable future is. I don't think he ever will be good enough to unseat like Jock Peterson from that role, but that's a few years away. It's going to take a little bit longer due to the age, but I think he can be a solid outfielder, maybe even outfielder three, but definitely outfielder four for your fantasy team. So I like Verdugo a lot. But yeah, any thoughts on him?
How about you, Andy?
I like that he walks. He took a big step when it comes to walking. You know, in his first year, he beat his strikeouts. And then in 2015, he decided, no, I'm going to swing at everything. And he struck out a decent amount. But again, he showed maturity at 20 years old. I'd like to see kids say, okay, this is a problem. I'm not walking as much as I should. And then say, now let's fix that. Let's get better. I think he probably starts the – I think I'm aggressive in saying he might be a AAA this year, which would be nice for him. He has got a great arm, so he will stick at defense. That's a good thing for him. But I like the maturity. I like the ability to grow. Say this is a problem. Let me fix it. Home runs profile is an okay home run hitter. Okay average. Okay speed. So not sexy. But it is that safe, that 3-4 that Matt was talking about. So a lot to like in Verdugo. But I think especially in this list with the incredible upside for some of these guys that are up at our top 10, and even for me, for my 10 to 11, my 20 through 11, I think he doesn't quite make the cut because there are some sexy names that we haven't mentioned yet.
I like Verdugo a lot. I don't think the upside is exceptional, but I do think that he has a very solid floor. His bat-to-ball skills are absolutely crazy, especially for, you know, being only 20 years old. I think that he's already there in terms of maturity at the plate. The walk rate did double last year, like you mentioned, Andy, which is really nice to see. So the plate skills, which I always look for first and foremost, are really sound with Verdugo. I don't know how great his power will be when it's all said and done. I think he'll be probably somewhere around a 20 home run bat, but I don't think that the speed's going to be great. He's been caught a ton in the past. Last year in Double A in a 477 at bats, he was caught 6 times and was successful twice. That's obviously a problem. We've seen in years past as well where he's gotten caught, 5 times in 2015. I don't know if I can count on the speed quite yet. And he's also a bigger guy in terms of his frame, almost, 200 pounds, 6 foot. I don't think that the upside is that massive, but I do think he's somebody that is going to make the major leagues. He's also somebody that has a pretty decent amount of pop and exceptional bat to ball skills. So that's something that I think is worth him being a top 20 guy here.
I saw a comp for Verdugo on a Baseball America podcast. They comped him to Melky Cabrera. While it doesn't sound sexy, Melky Cabrera has been a very solid player for fantasy players for the better part of the last decade. So
yeah, he's hung around that $10 to $15 outfielder range for a long time, which is good. That's what you want from a 3 or a 4 outfielder. You don't want guys that are going to not play every day or give you bad. Go on streaky streaks. You want those $10-$15 guys for your third and fourth spot. So I like that. I like that from Verdugo, not Vertigo.
Sorry, I said Vertigo. My bad.
But there's some great names that we haven't mentioned, guys. Come on, can't have floor guys on your top 20 list. Where's your aggressiveness?
You're really not going to like my next guy then.
Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready. Lay it on me.
You're the poster boy for floor and proximity, Andy. I don't want to hear it.
I changed my tune, man. I'm excited. WBC.
No, the fact that you had Acuna at 20 means that you haven't changed your tune.
No, I really haven't. No, you're right.
At number 18, you had, what, Kyle Lewis. Do you guys want to touch on him really fast? Where do you have him, Matt?
I have him 13th.
13. See, I don't have him in my top 20. I have him outside of that. I just, you know, for right now, I'm kind of putting him off to the side. Like I do with all the other guys that get injured for a full season. I just kind of put him off to the side. If he was healthy going into this year, I probably would have him somewhere in that vicinity. I would have
If he was healthy, he would have been my number one pick in all dynasty supplement drafts over Nick Senzel.
Agreed.
That's how much I loved him, and I mean, I put him 13 on the outfield list. Overall, with the injury and knowing he's going to miss half of the year next year, I still have him as my 28th fantasy asset. So I love Lewis. I think he takes unnecessary hit because of the playing at Mercer, which isn't a traditional baseball power, but I mean, he did everything you could ask. He won the Golden Spikes Award for the nation's best college player while there. He's a legitimate middle of the order bat with a chance to stick in center field. I mean, we don't know how he's going to return from knee injury, but that was before he got hurt. He's right up there with Tyler O'Neill for me. They're kind of real close. I think Lewis has a slightly higher ceiling than somebody like Tyler O'Neill, but the proximity is going to be 2 to 3 years longer. He was going to be fast-tracked, but the knee injury kind of slowed that down. So, I mean, the deciding factor for me to push him down the list is the proximity, because, like I said, originally he was supposed to be a high riser, but he won't be anymore. But I love Kyle Lewis.
There's a strong chance I'll have him in my top 10 next year. If he, like, comes back at the end of this season and just starts tearing it up, then, yeah, I'll probably have him in my top 10. I if I was going to make a top 200 list, you said you had him at, what, 25 or 23, Matt? Something like that?
28 over my 28. Entire list, yeah.
Yep. Again, I'm doing an awesome job of remembering numbers. I would probably have him, yeah, probably in the somewhere in the top 50. So I might be a little bit lower on the, not the upside, but just lower on, you know, kind of dinging him for being injured right now. But at the same time, I think the upside is immense. I loved Lewis coming into this draft. He was my top guy, and I still think that he presents a ton of upside, especially for, you know, what you could get him for right now as well. I think people are not worried about his injury, but they're willing to let go of him because they feel like he's far away. And really, I don't think he's as far away as people think. If he comes back this year and is solid and then puts up a really solid year next season, then he could be fast-tracked the year after that. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at that at all.
Despite the injury, I've seen him going. I've done 3 supplement drafts for Dynasty Leagues. He's gone no later than 6 overall in all 3 of them.
Yeah, I took him with at number 4, I believe, in our – we did a, 10 or 12-person mock draft for ITL a couple months back, and I had the number 4 pick, and I took him at 4. So, I mean, that's typically where he's gone.
That's the discount you're getting. You're getting a 3 to 4 pick discount. So,
I mean, and it's worth it. It's worth it. It's definitely worth it. I really like Lewis, especially as you guys said, if they bring him up quickly, which I don't see why they shouldn't. The Seattle outfield is awful. I have him lower on my list because of the injury and the proximity for a guy like O'Neill, who I have higher. But there's a lot to like with him, especially the arm, which means he's playing there every day, which will be good. But I'm excited to see him. I think looks like last news I have for him is that he was running on flat ground, and estimated return is sometime in August. So it would be good to see him come back, and that's exciting.
I think if we were doing a list just based on pure upside alone, not worrying about proximity or anything like
much
that.
Higher.
Yeah, he would be a top 5 guy, I think.
Agreed,
just based
definitely.
On that alone.
Yeah.
So at number 18 for me, I had Anthony Alford. I love the upside. I think that the power is going to grow a bit. I know that he is getting up there in age. He's 22 already, but the frame is solid. He's stealing bases. The plate skills are not great, and that's something that I think is worrisome. But from just a pure fantasy angle, I think he's somebody that can provide steals and home runs. I love the organization he plays for. I think he'll end up getting a shot sometime in the next year, maybe a little bit later than that. But at the end of the day, I think that the skill set alone is worth taking a shot on somebody like Alford. There's certainly a lot of risk in the plate skills, like I said, because he is striking out way too much at this moment in time. But again, I think that I would like to bet on the tools rather than worry about some of the risks that are involved. Do you guys have Anthony Alford ranked somewhere in your top 20 at all, Matt? Andy?
He's in that group just outside my top 20, right around Bader and Tavares. He's 26 overall, 71 overall for my top 100 list. but 26 for outfield.
So. How about you, Andy?
He's outside my top 20, and that's mostly to do with the age and the fact that he's never touched double A. Strikeouts a problem. Strikeouts problematic. 117 last year.
Well, that's not... last year was like a waste for him. He was hurt pretty much the whole year. I know he got a lot of at bats, but he was playing through a bunch of stuff. And
yeah, and still between, you know, playing hurt and not really having a great contact rate, he was able to, you know, steal what 18 bases and have 9 home runs. I think that that's pretty telling.
Yeah, I mean, I think the upside. Absolute upside for Alford, I think, is 15 to 20 homers, and I think he can steal 40 bags. And I think he's a plus defender in center, so perhaps I should have had him a little higher, but I was worried about the injuries and the contact. Fractured kneecap and severe concussion last year kind of took a lot of time away from him. I know he still got almost 350 at-bats, but the thing that I like a lot about him is he's an athlete. He's a former college football player that translated over to the baseball diamond. I hope that Blue Jays are aggressive with him. I want to see him in double A next year to start. I want to see him up in the high minors. I think a perfect world comp, assuming everything breaks right for him, I think is Starling Marte. So that's good enough to get it interested, you know?
I don't think the average will be as good, but he has put up, you know, 320 in A ball and 293 as well. And then
I think it can be. Yeah.
Yeah, and then 302 at Dunedin as well. But yeah, I think that it's not a crazy comparison between the two.
It's a perfect world. Yeah, I don't think he does, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I gotcha. All right, let's move on Anthony Alford. What did you see?
Yeah, I was just gonna say I saw a comp. It was Bonifacio esque, without the average, like you guys said.
Bonifacio, God.
The high end and the low end all in one.
All right, who's you guys' number 17 prospect? I had Alex Verdugo there. So Andy, who do you have at 17?
I had Moniak at 17.
I don't know why I didn't write that down.
Your favorite guy, Corey Ray.
Oh my gosh, I love Corey Ray so much. I love him so much that I kept him off my top 20 list. Andy, do you have Corey Ray ranked?
He scored in a semi. No, I don't. I don't have Corey Ray ranked. All right. Why do you have Corey Ray ranked? Tell us, please.
No, Matt loves Corey Ray. Go ahead, Matt.
I love Corey Ray. Maybe perhaps it's you know a little bit too much, but don't look at the minor league numbers. It was an aggressive assignment right out of the gate. The Brewers sent him to a full season ball after getting drafted. He tore up the University of Louisville. He's a Chicago kid, so that adds a little bit to the intrigue for me. But fifth pick in the draft by the Brewers. Aggressively, like I said, Florida State League. He flashed the skills. At Louisville, last year, he had 15 homers and stole 44 bases. I know the numbers don't translate strictly to that as a pro ball, but, I mean, you have to like what you got there. Solid average tools across the board. No big weakness, but no also big standout flashy tool. So, again, he's one of those popular high floor guys that no one really likes on this podcast, evidently, except for me. That's fine, though. you might be able to get him a little bit later in drafts because he doesn't have that standout tool. On the positive side of Ray's underwhelming line in the Florida State League, he was still good enough to post a 101 WRC plus for the level, which, if you don't know, that's he's slightly above average in a pitcher-pitcher-heavy league.
Yeah, but he's 22. Who cares?
That's fine. It was an aggressive assignment. He played a long year in college. I'm giving you a lot of nice comps today, and this one for me, for Corey Ray, if everything breaks right, high-end comp I have is Odubel Herrera, without all the weird gyrations that Herrera does and all this stuff. But that's a reasonable ceiling for me. Yeah, and I think Corey Ray is really good, so... I'm on an island here. I had Corey Ray originally.
No, you're not on an island. You're not, because a lot of guys that cover the minor leagues love Corey Ray. So you are not on an island at all.
On this podcast, I am.
Yeah, you know, I don't like want to hate on Corey Ray because I don't think he's island. Trash. What do you think about Corey Ray, Andy?
I mean, I have my one note for Corey Ray is twitch swing. So it's a weird swing, but it is twitchy, which is kind of what you like for leadoff hitters, you know. No one's ever going to say, oh, why doesn't this leadoff hitter hit like Robbie Cano? Because they shouldn't. They should get on base and steal. But it's kind of hard to ignore those high A stats at 22 years old where you didn't really see anything exciting. So, I don't know. I'd much rather have the other Milwaukee outfield prospect,
well,
who I'm sure
course.
We'll talk about soon.
Of course.
I think with the thing with Corey Ray, too, is he can be in the major leagues at the end or in the middle of 2018, which is relatively quick. So I think I think that's fair. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of competition out there, depending on what you think of Keon Broxton, which I happen to love, Brett Phillips, who I happen to not love, and then Lewis Brinson, who we all happen to love. I mean, his fate's kind of intertwined with all them guys. Ryan Braun's still there. Domingo Santana, who I still kind of have some faith in the outfield.
Don't forget Kirk Newenhouse, man.
There's a lot of nice pieces out there for the Brewers. So it's all going to depend on where all that goes. But if needed, I think Corey Ray could come up in the middle of 2018 and not embarrass himself at all.
I like Corey Ray from the sense he could be a NL-only guy that's pretty solid. And Odubel Herrera, for that matter, wasn't somebody that everybody had their eye on until he put up a really nice season last year. Actually, it was the year before where people really started to, you know, kind of buck the trend on Odubel Herrera, mm-hmm. thinking that he was an average player. But either way, I think that the comp is pretty fitting for him. I think that he does have the profile to be a strong batting average guy. I don't love the frame. I don't think he's as fast as people think he is. I just don't see it when I watch him play. I've seen him play a couple times. You know,
he's smooth. Yeah, he like glides. He's not. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, but you're making him sound like a great athlete, and I just don't see him as a, you know, BJ Upton-esque athlete. I think he's way lesser of a guy. But at the same time, there is something to be said for somebody that has. It definitely has a fast track towards the major leagues and getting playing time, and that's certainly valuable. I get it, and I'm not going to knock anybody for liking Corey Ray. He's just not my cup of tea. I think that what was glaring to me, this is what kind of my problem is with Ray. Going into the draft, I had a long discussion about Ray with Eric Loggenhagen, one of the best guys in the industry for prospects, right? And he essentially was echoing what I was saying. He's a above average hit tool, somebody that, you know, is a lock almost to make the major leagues, but the upside for fantasy isn't amazing, which is fine. So I already had a little bit of a doling, you know, kind of sense of what Corey Ray could be for fantasy coming into the draft. The fact that he went to Milwaukee is great, but at the end of the day, I really wanted to see what he did in high A because he was older for level, and he really just, the hit tool didn't show. He was not a real good, you know, walk guy, which is what he had been throughout his whole entire history in college and such. And the fact that he got caught five times stealing bases is a problem for me too. Also, when you also add in the fact that he got injured, a lot went wrong for what I expected out of Ray last year, even though I already had negative feelings about him going into the draft itself. So all in all, I'm negative on Ray. I don't think that it doesn't mean that I don't think he'll be a quality major league player. I think he'll be fine. I just don't see the upside for fantasy. I think that this is once. I would have rather taken Michael Conforto 2 years ago when he was coming up through the minor leagues than Corey Ray now, even though they're completely different profiles.
I agree with that. It's also worth noting that Corey Ray had a minor knee surgery this offseason. So regardless of how minor that it is, it's still surgery. So we have to keep that in mind as well.
Sure. Sure. I'm going to stop knocking Corey Ray because I really am not that down on him. I know you and I disagree a lot on it, Matt, and it's not, I don't think either of us are wrong. I just think.
No, I don't either. I don't either. I just like to give you crap for it because.
Well, I get a lot of crap from a lot of people about it. Because
it's not
a secret that I don't like Corey Ray. So if he ends up busting, then I certainly will try and take all the credit for it, even though I'm kind of copping out by saying I think he's a quality player. But. If he ends
I'll
up
take
doing
the credit
great, then
for
I'll
it.
Be like, well, I always said that he could be a quality player.
Yeah. Give me the credit. I'll take the credit. I don't like him. Hey, what am I going to do?
Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Let's move on to number 16. So, number 16 for me is Juan Soto. How about you, Matt?
I have Derek Fisher of Houston Astros.
He plays, you can't trick me, he plays basketball. Someone had to make
basketball.
The joke, right?
Hey, yeah, he steals Matt Barnes' wife, too, or something like that, or whatever the whole thing is.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Andy, who do you have at 16?
I have Nick Williams at 16.
Ew.
Yeah. I threw up in my mouth a little bit. Let's see. Where do we go here? Do you guys have Juan Soto at all in your top 20?
He's 23 for me. You guys are beating around my peripherals.
He's not on my list.
I love Juan Soto, though.
All right, so we won't talk about him right now. Let's talk about Fisher because he just missed my top 20, and I think that all of us kind of can talk about, give a few, you know, examples of what we like about him. So, Andy, I'll let you start off with Fisher.
Well, the first thing and the easiest thing is that he's not going to play this year. It's not the fact that he's untalented at all. It's just the fact that the team is so stacked in outfield. He's got no chance, especially when people like Tucker and the young outfield that they have. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. They might trade him. They might move him around. You know, we see this happen all the time. Guys move around. Mookie Betts started second baseman, went to the outfield. So I'd like to see him maybe move around, maybe get traded. That would make no sort of projecting what he is going to do a little bit easier. I do think he has the age, the ability, and the talent, and the opportunity to come up this year and play, but not to stick around for a long time. Tall outfielder who did better in AAA than in AA, owns plus power, plus speed, not a great defender. So again, it's where is he going to play? It's not that he's not ready. It's just where is he going to play? But I actually really do like Derek Fisher, but he did not make my top 20.
Yeah, he just fell outside of the top 20, but I could have easily made a case for him to be in my top 15, to be honest with you.
It's really easy to make that case because if you just looked at his numbers and you just looked at his tools without the name and without the team, this is a good kid. He's going to play. It's just a matter of where and when.
Back-to-back 2020 seasons as well. Yep. Go ahead, Matt.
The only player in the minor leagues that did that, back-to-back 2020. So.
Go, and I'll ask you this, Matt. Do you care about the depth chart problem in Houston right now when talking about Derek Fisher, or do you tend to just look at the players? So you do care about the fact that there seems to be...
I do care a little bit, but it's also Nori Aoki and Carlos Beltran and Josh Reddick and George Springer. All those guys get hurt quite a bit. So I do think that there is something... He'll have a role this year. It might not be the largest of roles, but there's also guys like Teoscar Hernandez and stuff in front of him. I think Fisher does come up this year. I think he comes up... It's probably nothing more than September. But I do think in 2018, he's at least a fourth outfielder at best for Houston, or at worst, I mean. He's the interesting thing, he's got that sexy power speed combo that we all love. He's going to be a better fantasy player than he is real-life player. And I say that because the defense in the outfield is terrible. He takes bad routes, no throwing arm. He's not going to be a batting average guy, but he's got good plate skills that should carry some value in OBP formats. Like you already touched on, he has the distinction of being back-to-back 20 homer, 20 steal seasons in the minors. He starts to strike out a little bit too much, so it kind of puts a cap on the ceiling. But still strong in OBP leagues, assuming the play skills translate. I think he'll be up in the second half, but I think he plays a sizable role in 2018 in Houston. But to answer your question about that, I think he'll find time. Those guys in front of him aren't necessarily pillars of health. And I think he might be a piece in a trade for Jose Quintana or something like that, which would really boost him up. But to answer your question, you kind of have to weigh in the depth chart a little bit. Like I told you about Bader. Ferris and Bader, I don't see a really quick route to playing time in St. Louis because outfielders are all young. Fowler, Piscotty, Grichik, there's none of those guys are going anywhere anytime soon. So I get what you're saying there. So I do weigh it a little bit, but I think Fisher is a slightly better player than Bader. So I take that in consideration as well.
I think Fisher is the type of guy that you could probably profile him to somebody like Jock Peterson in the minor leagues, right? Because Jock was still running when he was Fisher's age. Or is he still Fisher's age now? I don't even know. But
Fisher's, he's pretty young.
Well, Fisher's, I think, turning 23 or coming close to
turning 23 this year, yeah.
There you go.
And
so
Peterson's turning 25 in April, so yeah.
Yeah, they're not close. But, you know, the allure about Jock Peterson when he was coming up was, like, potential 25-25 guy, potential 30-25 guy, you know, somebody like that. And I think that that's certainly in the cards for somebody like Fisher, but the contact might always be a looming problem, especially against lefties. You would assume that he'd be platooned. Houston is very advanced in their stats and sabermetrics group. I love Fisher from a fantasy aspect, and I completely think that you nailed hit the nail on the head there, Matt, about him being a better fantasy asset than real life because he is kind of god-awful out there defensively. But, again, I really look at plate skills first and foremost. I love the fact that he walks, and that's going to give him a long career, in my opinion, if he can continue to do that. But the contact will be where he can either be a decent guy in 5x5 or somebody that you take much later, like a Jock Peterson, than you would in OBP formats based on their OBP / average skills, you know, depending on whatever league you're in. So overall, I like Fisher a lot. He made it just outside my top 20, but from an upside standpoint alone from fantasy, I think that you can make a case to even put him close to the top 10, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you said. He's an interesting player to watch. He's a hard player to rank, hard player to value. Because like you said, there's other variables with Houston being loaded and him being up close. I mean, in other organizations, it's quite feasible that he's up in a month. Right? I mean,
yeah, I completely agree.
I absolutely. And which one of you ranked him at 16?
It was me.
And who'd you have at 16, Andy?
I had Nick Williams.
Nick Williams. I think we should talk about him because I think it's about the point, about that time. Andy, give us some Nick Williams love.
About that time, Andy.
Is this
Andy
the time we sit down and is this the time we sit down and tell Andy that Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny aren't real too, or do we wait?
What?
On that?
No.
Well, thanks for spoiling it.
Yeah. Sorry.
Well, so Nick Williams earns this spot, and again, not like I love it. At 16, I'm not saying he's the greatest outfielder out there, but he earns his spot because he will play, and he does have a high ceiling. You know, I know it's been lowered a lot because of his problems with his swing, and he strikes out too much, and he just is an idiot overall because he never walks, which is stupid.
He walks less than Lieutenant Dan does.
Yes, he does.
That's messed up, yeah. Lieutenant Dan.
I didn't think you'd go lower than an Oscar Tavares joke, Matt, but you did it. You did it.
Murica won.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry.
That's good. I'm no, good. No. So Nick Williams will play this year, and he will get his chance to shine. He's finally available, and you guys can bash on me all you want, but there was a time when you guys were saying Nick Williams was going to be a great outfielder because he has that potential. He's got decent power and decent speed, which could lead him to being a 15-15-20-20 guy, which again, it's not sexy, but is a 3-4 solid $10-15 return. And again, if he has a good year starting, playing, you can pick him up for a dollar. And if he has a bad year, drop him and call Andy an idiot.
He walked four times at 28 at-bats in the spring this year. It's actually not bad at all.
That's actually like 100% increase from what he did last whole season.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. I honestly feel like if Dom Brown, if he never happened, then I feel like I would be a little bit higher on Williams, but I wasn't even that high on him last year either. Like, to be honest with you, because the fact that he doesn't walk, that again, the first thing I look at with guys is their plate skills, and then I like to watch them. And Nick Williams, when you watch him, you love it, right? He's aggressive at the plate. Yep. He's got a nice projectable body. He looks like somebody that could legitimately play in the majors, and I think he will play in the majors. It's just from a fantasy perspective, it's really hard for me to get excited about a guy that, you know, last year, for instance, only walked 4% of the time, and that was an increase from the year before. In Reading. So, I mean, even in Lehigh Valley, that's Matt, you can tell me this. Is that a great place to hit or not?
It's not as good as their double A field park, that's for sure. It's more pitcher friendly than their double A park, but
if you looked at Reading, the nice double A park, he only had 4 home runs in a very short sample the year before. But I think what's telling is Philadelphia got really overzealous with him and started him off in triple A last
season.
That's
definitely true.
And yep. Instead of letting him marinate a little bit longer in Reading, they threw him up to AAA, and he didn't get crushed. I mean, but he only hit .258 with 13 bombs, and once again, just didn't steal a ton. He had 6 stolen bases, 4 caught stealings, didn't walk at all. The strikeout rate went all the way down to 27%, which is the worst of his minor league career since, 2014 area. So, I mean, I just think in general, they've handled him a little bit shady. And Michael Saunders is there now. They obviously signed him to play as long as he can without getting absolutely injured. Aaron Althair is finally back and ready to play in his platoon role this year. They have guys like Roman Quinn, who I'm sure will be talked about. They just have other options that aren't necessarily bypassing him, but it's just the profile in general to me has not really changed, and it's really not been that great for me since the beginning. Overall, I don't think he's going to be a bad fantasy player. I just don't think that he has a lot of shine to his, star, if that even makes any sense. I'm just not a big fan of Williams in general. And I know a couple other publications that are insane on him, and I just don't care.
Oh, my God. I know exactly what publication you're talking about.
Don't say him.
I'm not going to, but I don't see it. I just don't. I even think like guys like Dylan Cousins, they have to get a shot at front of Nick Williams. They've earned it more.
I like Cousins. Full disclosure, yeah. I like Cousins more than Williams.
Yeah, and you brought up the walks. You had four walks in this spring and what?
This spring.
28 at bats. Wow. He had 19 and 497 at bats in AAA last year.
But that could be looked at as a good thing because I do like to, while I don't look at overall raw stats in spring, I do like to look at strikeout and walks. And
nope, that counts. Contact rate, all that stuff.
Howie Kendrick has struck out 10 times and walked once this spring. Do you expect him to be a good player this year? Probably not, right? So that kind of that's a little telling. Maybe we can look at Odubel Herrera. You know, he has what? He doesn't have a lot of at-bats. He has 19 at-bats, but he's only struck out once. So there you go.
Yeah, I guess, and the thing with Williams too is it's not just a number standpoint. He got benched a couple times for lack of hustle, which what do you think of that or whatever, I don't know, but that has to count. It's an off the field, on the field issue with hustle and drive, they called it. Walk rate career low, like you touched on. Strikeout rate rose 26%. His play skills have kind of eroded since the trade from Texas. To be honest, you look at his Philadelphia stats and Texas stats, and they're not. It looks like a different player. To be honest,
part of the Hamels trade initially, right?
Yep, yes, sir. He was looked at as him and Alfaro as like the best pieces, but then you look at Jared Eichhoff's actually probably been the best.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, potential to work out for them. If
really nice haul for them, though, when you look back on it. Really nice haul.
Yeah, still. But I guess the thing with Nick Williams, too, is a lot of it is if you can play center field, which in this organization, Odubel Herrera has that on lock. So that's not really anything that's going to come into play. And a lot of it's going to depend on, like you said, we touched on a lot of Phillies outfield options they got coming. And the Phillies are one of those teams that are expected to be in the running for Bryce Harper and all that stuff. So we'll see if he goes there. Who knows? He's a really hard player. If my advice to you is if you own Nick Williams, you have to hold on to him because the ceiling is still there. I just think it's a very – he's got about as high of a ceiling – high of a chance of reaching a ceiling as he does walk rate right now for me. So that's not good. You have to hold him. I'm not trying to give him away for pennies on a dollar because he's one of those guys. He could get some instruction when he gets up to Philly and, oh, shit, and something clicks. Like, it could be something like that. Maybe he was bored in AAA. Who knows? Definitely a big year for him this year.
This is definitely, I would agree, this is definitely the last year he could maintain any sort of top pedigree. If he just completely shits the bed this year, then we will drop him from our... He will go the way of the starling.
Starling, God. And I do want to just mention with Juan Soto, we don't have to go forever on him, but he's Dominican. I'll just start off by saying that. And I think that his plate approach is exceptional. I've been saying exceptional a lot this episode. It's outstanding. I'll just change it up a little bit. And I think that he is insanely projectable. I love him to death. I think that he is going to be an absolute fantasy stud. Do I think that the stolen bases will be like 20 or 15 or anything like that? Not necessarily. But I do think he has a little bit of speed in there. Again, the plate skills are great, and it also will correlate well with batting average and on-base percentage leagues. I think the Nationals are going to be in a pretty solid lineup for years to come, and I think the power is going to project to upwards of 20, possibly even 30 if everything broke right for him. I love the guy to death. He's only 18, and he's only 185 pounds. Once he gets up there to the 200, 215-pound mark, the sky's the limit for the kid. Love him to death.
Yeah, I'm definitely in a buying mood for Soto because he is young, and boy, did he freaking kill the GCL. I mean, those are really, really nice numbers to
Player
see.
Player of the year, I believe, in the GCL.
If you're not looking, as a 17-year-old, he had 368, 420, 553 with 5 homers and 190 at-bats.
That's
legit.
Yeah, that's as good as it gets.
What does high score mean? Is that good?
Did I break it? But the thing with Soto is I like how you said this, Andy, how you like him a lot this year. This is your last chance to get him because right now the price is at least a little bit low. He's kind of what we talked about with Cal Quantrill on the pitching show. This is your last shot because when he gets up higher...
We should do that as a show. We should do like an hour-long show on every position and like top three guys to buy for this year and top three guys to sell.
We could do that.
Sorry, that's probably more of a behind-the-curtain conversation. Apologize.
Listeners, if you have any suggestions for what we should do after these outfield rankings, let us know. But the thing with Soto that you need to know, be aware of, it's going to be hit tool and power, which is great. They're going to be a zero speed component that comes with this for fantasy value. The speed and power are going to be enough, and they're going to play up because he has an idea what he's doing at the plate, especially for being so young. The sky's really the limit here. So he's an exciting fantasy player, light years away, but the Nationals just keep turning him out internationally. So first Robles, and now it's Soto.
Number 15, who is your number 15 prospect, Andy?
I have Jake Bowers at 15.
We already went through him at first base. Next guy,
oh, we
please.
Did. That's, yeah, all right, next guy. Tapia.
Who?
Ramael Tapia.
Oh, Ramael Tapia.
He's my 15, Ramael Tapia.
Let's do it. I like it because it's a dessert, too.
Do we really want to do Tapia?
We love Tapia around here.
So both of you guys have him at 15?
Yes, sir.
That's pretty – well, I guess Andy had him at 14 technically, but I'll let you start, Matt, since I kind of went forever and so did Andy the last time.
Well, if you're a guy that stats the stat line, which you shouldn't do, Tapia is your guy because he's done nothing but put up monster crooked numbers in the minor leagues. He's been one of my favorite prospects on the offensive side for years. He's an ultra aggressive hitter at the plate. The approach is C-ball, hit ball. There's nothing else to it. 317, 363, 446 career hitter. He's unorthodox. I like that. He's a little bit different. He doesn't fit the mold. Unorthodox setup at the plate, even more so when he gets two strikes because he gets into this little tiny crouch. You have to watch it, look at it to see it.
I hate that.
The hope is, I don't mind it because it doesn't really change his game too much, surprisingly. But the hope here is he can put all the tools together, and if he does, and if he gets the playing time, which this was written before the David Dahl and Ian Desmond injury, so I think Tapia should get some time now to make him relevant in redraft formats as soon as right now, actually. I think he's a guy that's going to hit for strong batting average and hit 15 homers and steal 25 bases. Oh, and did I mention he plays in Coors? So it's going to be a very exciting skill set. He's going to hit for batting average. He's a really bad defensive player, but I don't know if that really matters at this point for us in the fantasy realm. But I love Ramael Tapia.
Andy, Ramael Tapia.
This guy, I can't really say much more other than something that I mentioned in the, I think it was the shortstop podcast, which was we mentioned that last year Colorado didn't, the AAA team didn't have a home, so they constantly were on the road.
That was the AA team
was constantly on the road, never had a home, so that can be a problem. And Tapia said, not for me. He has power, it's there. And it won't shine until he gets the Coors, and then it will even shine brighter because it's Coors. He's not only does he have power, but he has top of the lineup power, which is going to be really special. He is going to play this year. I really do think that, especially with all these injuries, because you just can't count on guys like Carlos Gonzalez to be there forever because he just isn't. I really, really like him. The stance is like a elongated Matt Carpenter. You know, he takes that long, long step, and he does squat down. But I really like Tapia. I think if you are in redraft leagues, I think he's worth a late-round flyer. Stash him on the bench because he's coming up. He's quick. He's got good power and plays a Coors Field.
Sure. I think he's certainly worth a dollar or two in auctions, maybe a last-round buy in snake drafts, etc. I just want to say this about Tapia. I have him in my top 10, and it's because I think he has plenty of room to grow. He still is very, very slender, and I get it if you don't believe in the power, but I do. I think that eventually he's going to be a 15 to 20 home run guy, maybe even more if he fills out a bit, and I think that he'll always have more than 20 stolen base prowess as well. Bat-to-ball guy, 80+% contact rates throughout the minor leagues, 300+ batting average in his future, especially playing at Coors, always going to have run and RBI numbers playing in that lineup as well with Nolan Arenado and all the other star-studded guys there. I love Tapia. I'm absolutely irrational about him. I always will be until he proves me otherwise. And crouch or not, I love the guy.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those special players. You know, he's in your top 10 and he's in Matt and mine's bottom 20. But there's nothing saying that he can't way surpass that. I'm keeping an eye on him this year. I'm very excited to see what Tapia does.
He was a guy for me that I ranked a little bit lower preseason because I didn't see a route to playing time initially. If I was making my list now as opposed to a month and a half ago, I think he would be in the back end of my top 10 because I think the impact that he's going to have this year gives him a lot more fantasy value, obviously. So I say this with that caveat, but I really do love Tapia. Everybody I have above him, minus one guy, I think, has ultimate ceiling. But Tapia might have a higher ceiling than almost anybody on this list.
He's number 9 for me. just to put that out there. Yeah. We'll go over that next week. But he's the rare occurrence of proximity being close and plenty of projection left. It's kind of weird.
Yes, it's you hit the nail on the head right there. Yep.
It's kind of like if Albies were to get promoted sometime in the next 2 months or 3 months or something like that. It would be kind of like that. You know, still proximity is great and he still has a ton of projection. That's enough on Tapia. Let's move on to my number 15 was Leody Taveras, just so everybody knows. Number 14 for me is Aaron Judge. How about you, Andy?
I have Judge at 12.
Who's your number 14 guy?
We just talked about him.
Oh, my bad. Well, no, you went to Tapia. Who was before that or after that?
Well, I had Bowers, but I guess I was wrong in saying that.
No, it's okay. Who was after Bowers or after Tapia? I'm sorry. Was it Judge or
Winkler.
Winkler. I do have Matt 13. Sorry. I even wrote these down and I can't get them right. How about you, Matt? Who do you have it for?
That's okay. Reading is hard. Our president doesn't read, so you shouldn't either.
I have Bradley Zimmer at 14.
Oh, no way. Oh, that's
Andy's
upsetting.
Number 4 prospect. What are you talking about?
Number right. 7.
Let's see. I think we should. Where do you guys have Judge? You have 12. Have him at 12, Andy. Where do you have Aaron Judge, Matt?
I have him number 9.
That's so funny. I had him at number 9. I made my list, and I had him at number 9, and I switched him with the person who I have now at number 9. That's interesting.
Well, we could talk about him. He's in the back end of you guys' list, so back half. So we can bring him up now if you want to do that.
Yeah, it's fine. We'll bring him up now just to kind of get him out of the way. He's kind of like Joey Gallo, right? Mammoth guy.
Exactly. Huge. 275.
Yeah, it's 6'7", too. Strikeouts are a problem. Has massive power. Great home ballpark. I think that's all going to come down to whether he can strike out at a decent clip. And honestly, it really doesn't come down to that either. I think he's a long-term Adam Dunn type. You know, somebody that can challenge 40-plus home runs, but also not hit for batting average, but be a plus in on-base percentage leagues. Also Chris Carter type, whichever way you want to put it. I do think that he has a little bit better raw plate skills than those type of guys, but you get my drift here. I think he's a better athlete overall and somebody that could improve in multiple aspects of his game if things play right. So I like Judge a lot. I have him at 14. I just am not outrageously high on him. Andy, go ahead.
Yeah, I will say that the one problem with Judge is, especially this, we see this a lot with big guys, fastballs thrown up in the zone are hard to get at because their arms are really big. You know, that might not seem like a thing, but it is, because at 6'7", your arms are so huge. But he does have the ability to hit that opposite field home run, which is a metric that we really like. It shows power, and that Yankee porch, I mean, it's just really easy. He did break the top 10 before, but I switched it around because of that swing and the strikeouts. But he is in the top 20 because as far as I can see, he's got that right field job come day one. So he's young. He's in the lineup. He's playing at Yankee Stadium. Go Baby Bombers.
11 strikeouts in 44 at-bats so far this spring in the minor 25%. Leagues.
25%. Yeah, but what you're forgetting is Yankees love guys that strike out. Look at what we did to Curtis Granderson. We turned a 320 guy who stole 25 bases, and we said, don't worry about that. Hit 180, but also hit 35 home runs.
Sure. Also, I mean, he's not as bad. I also said that. No, he's not Chris Carter bad in terms of strikeouts and such. Not Curtis Grant, so I'm talking Judge. He's not that bad, so he's not.
I got
that.
A good comp for Judge. I think I'll get to it. I with Judge, though, it's really weird. Sorry to cut you off, Mike. I've done it like 10 times today. I'm sorry. Last year at this time, I was a low man on Judge. And as you can see now, I'm the high man here, which is weird because he struck out 44% of the time, and my stock is up on him, but I don't know.
50% of the Yankees last year.
Yeah,
his brief stint.
That's not good. But one thing that is certain, one thing that is known with Judge, he's done it every level he's been at. He's a notoriously slow starter, and a guy like him is a little bit streaky because of the strikeouts. But I think he bounces back. Like Andy alluded, he's got nobody for that no competition for that job in right field, and he's a good defensive outfielder, so no reason to not have him out there. The batting average is the key thing. He might only hit 230, but he will post a decent walk rate, and he's a threat to pop 25-plus home runs, and I think that's a floor for him.
He's a threat to
that's
pop
a
30
floor.
Miles.
Yeah, 25 home runs is a realistic floor for next year. He can definitely get more. And you might think, okay, 230 with 25 home runs, big whoop-de-doo, that's not that much. But you look at somebody like Jay Bruce, who isn't really similar skill set to Judge without as much power. Jay Bruce was a borderline top 30 outfielder last year, depending on what format you played. So if Judge can do that his rookie season, his first full rookie season, I think you're looking at a guy who is going to be a top 20 outfielder for a majority of his career, and it's definitely somebody worth investing in. And I know as a right-handed hitter, Yankee Stadium isn't as sexy because the left center field gap is massive there, but Judge is a notoriously pull hitter, so he does go down the line a lot, and it's still a relatively short porch in left field as well. So I think the ballpark isn't anything, and plus he's a guy. If his body type is, I guess, the closest body comp in the baseball is Giancarlo Stanton to him. So he's a guy that he can hit out of any park if he gets a hold of it. It's just that's the question, is if he's going to hit it or not.
The thing with Judge, speaking of, too, is – oh, sorry. Go ahead, Andy.
No, I was saying, speaking of Stanton, how sexy was that home run the other day?
Oh, yeah, in the WBC yeah. against the Dominican. It was just absolutely nuts.
He just creamed that. But anyway, go ahead, Mike.
Well, the only thing I want to add with Judge is that you don't want to hope for this strikeout rate to improve, because I don't think it ever will. He just naturally has holes in his swing, and that's fine. I think what we want to look for as he matures is him to be a little bit more selective in where he hits. You know,
but the Yankees don't teach that. The Yankees don't teach that. For whatever reason, they're notoriously bad at taking guys that maybe could be 280 hitters and turning them into 230 hitters.
Well, regardless, I don't think anybody's going to be depending on him for batting average anyways. I think it's going to be definitely more of a home run thing, and that's completely fine. I do think that he's a very safe option. I'm going to have him at 14, but it's not a knock on his upside or anything like that. I do really think that Judge is going to be a quality MLB player for a long time. I love athletic kids, and he's very athletic. He also walks. I love that as well. He has mammoth home run power, probably some of the best raw power of this group, if not the best, if we're being completely honest. So I think there's a lot to like with him.
I think it's kind of weird that we have a guy with a 40-50% strikeout rate and we're calling him safe. But, I mean, he is.
Yeah, he's safe in a lot of ways. Guys that walk are typically safe. I would say that he's safer now than I would have said Mark Trumbull was at this time in his career as well. So it's like,
yeah, I think the Jay Bruce comp is apt. The below batting average, good pop, decent
Jay Bruce
place.
Has some speed, though, a little bit more than Judge, I would say.
Jay Bruce's career high in stolen bags is 12. So, I don't even think Judge gets about 8 or 9, but that's not too far off.
Yeah. Anything you want to add on Judge, Andy?
Nope. Go Yankees.
Oh, God. All right. Number 13 for me is Hunter Renfroe. How about you, Matt?
My 13 was Kyle Lewis. My 14 was Bradley Zimmer. I don't know if mentioned that.
Well, Bradley Zimmer for me is right at 11. How about you, Andy? You have him in the top 10, I'm assuming?
I have Zimmer at 7 and Renfroe at 9. So those are two top 10 guys for me. We can talk about it now. I don't really care.
You know what? I kind of want to wait because we've gone a long time on this show, and I want to wait for next week to talk about some of those two or some aspects of those two guys. Right. So
my 13 was Kyle Lewis then, and we already touched on him.
And number 13 for Andy was Jesse Winker. Number 12 for me, I don't know if he'll be in y'all's top 10. He probably will be. Tyler O'Neill?
He's 11 for me.
11 for me, too.
He's 10 for me. Sorry, he's 10 for me.
Oh, you bastard.
I think we'll talk about Tyler O'Neill will be the last guy we talk about this week. Either I would keep it there. That way it's a quality name. We can leave people guessing for next week in terms of our top 10 and how that's going to go. But
is Kyle Tucker in your top 10?
I do.
Okay. That's all. Okay. Everyone's covered on my list then. All right.
All right. So I'll let you lead off with Tyler O'Neill, Andy.
So strong arm, but is only going to play probably could only play corner outfield positions. The sexiest thing about Tyler O'Neill, and you guys know this too, it's the power. He has really, really, really strong swing. The bat flies off the ball, and I think I might be wrong, but did he lead in slugging last year?
He was up there. He was in Double-A. He was one of the top guys. I'm not sure if he did, but
well, I have second in home run here, and he won MVP. So he's a creamer, and we love that. He's a hard hitter, and proximity is there. Probably going to play this year because I don't like Mitch Haniger at all or Ben Gamel.
You called down on Mitch Haniger, homie.
Uh-oh. Mitch Haniger, my boy.
I do not like him.
We'll fight after this.
All right.
If anyone would like to be on a prospect podcast with me and Mike going forward, please send your resume. I'm just kidding.
I like O'Neill. I think he plays this year. I like him hitting home runs in Seattle. It's an exciting time for Seattle, too. Not a typical power hitter guy, though, 5'11", 210, but really like him. And he also steals, 16 steals in 2013, 2015, and 12 last year. So plus power, some steals. He's a name to watch. And that's why he earns number 11 for me.
What I like about him certainly is that he upped his walk rate substantially last year, up to 11% when it was 7% the year before. He also dropped his strikeout rate, which is awesome. You know, he was a 66% contact guy in 2015. And I know you and I, Matt, were talking about him last year, and we were really looking for his strikeout rate to improve, and he did that. It might have been marginal, but at the end of the day, he, you know, got a call to the Futures game. He did really well there. He actually impressed me a bit with his athleticism. I thought he was a little bit...
Not on defense, though.
Not on defense, but offensively, he impressed me with the way he looked at the plate. Defensively, yeah, he looked like an absolute joke out there, but I don't think he is an absolute joke defensively in actual life here.
Yeah, he should be fine.
It was just a one-game thing. But overall, I think that for fantasy, you know, I play in a dynasty league where extra base hits is a focal point of the scoring, and I have Tyler O'Neill on set, ready on deck. I mean, ready to go whenever he does get promoted, because I've been sitting on him since, you know, the beginning of last season when I drafted him in our, you know, our little restart thing, and I think that he can do that for you. The steals, I don't necessarily believe in. I think he maybe can be a double digit guy, but I'm not really relying on that with him. I think that he's, if I'm penciling in steals for a full season, I think he's more of like a 5-8 guy. But if he surprises me and surpasses that, then that's awesome. At the end of the day, I think that he's a quality player. I think that he's going to hit 25-plus home runs. The batting average is a bit in question based on the fact that he strikes out a ton. But, you know, the fact that he improved the plate skills overall last year is certainly a welcome sign that maybe things are turning around a bit at the plate for him, not just in the home run category. Matt, what's up with Tyler O'Neill for you?
Well, like you said, he did what we wanted him to do, was cut that strikeout rate. But I mean, the massive Canadian lumberjack, I don't think he's gonna hit for average. I don't think he's ever gonna be an asset there. But I do think he's gonna hit 30 home runs in his sleep. The power is gonna play in any park, and he's a big leverage guy, and bat speed. So, I mean, his power plays up because of that in general. He's just so strong and such a quick bat that it just jumps off his bat. He's the son of a bodybuilder. So my one knock on him is he doesn't look as athletic as he is, only because he's a little bit stiffer.
And he's Canadian, so.
And he's Canadian, so he drinks maple syrup by the gallon. But I guess the thing that... That's just minor quibbles, because there's nothing about his game that I don't like. Like I said before, I had him and Kyle Lewis pretty close, and I had O'Neill ahead of Lewis just because of O'Neill's going to get to the show pretty quickly. I think he comes up this year in September. I think he gets a full-time role in 2018 in Seattle. And I think he's a 250, 20 to 25 homer guy at the start, and I think eventually he's able to hit 30 home runs easily, and then probably chip in 5-8 steals, nothing major. It's not going to be a real big steel guy as he gets bigger and fills out. But, I mean, there's a lot to love here. A lot of guys are insanely higher on Tyler O'Neill than I am. But he's also a lot of notable lists. He didn't even make the top 100 Fangraphs list, as an example, which Longenhagen is one of the best out there. And I wanted to ask him about that if I talked to him on Twitter, what he doesn't like about O'Neill or anything like that. But he didn't make his top 100, which I thought was interesting. But... he's, from a fantasy standpoint, there's not a lot not to like, because it's going to be power. The one question is the batting average. He's going to be very dependent on the power, because he's not going to offer much in the speed department, but he should hit in the middle of a Seattle lineup, which is actually going to look a little better than it has been the last few years. So I love Tyler O'Neill.
Longenhagen might just really like Mitch Haniger, and when you look at O'Neill...
I love him.
When you look at O'Neill from a baseball perspective, not a fantasy perspective, he doesn't have nearly as much upside, because defensively, right, he's not terrible out there. I'm making it sound like he's absolutely hideous. Like,
he's probably a tick below average, which is playable.
Yeah, it's playable enough. And he could also, if the Mariners were to make a trade, he could DH for another AL club. He could also play a corner outfield spot for a National League club if he were to get traded as well. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about him getting traded.
What's that?
A little worried about him getting traded with DePoto's quick fingers, and I think Seattle's going to be in contention. Yeah,
and they could definitely trade a big piece like O'Neill, which really wouldn't be that bad of a move to get some type of substantial upgrade in either relief pitching, or maybe David Robertson's a suit for them at some point. I mean, he could set up Edwin Diaz, and that would be kind of perfect. Oh. We'll see. Anyways, we're going to save the rest of the list for next week. I know we didn't get through all of the 20 through 11s, but we went through a lot of names. So hopefully that is a nice jumping off point for next week for you guys. And again, it will probably be a little bit longer episode next week, even though we've gone over an hour and a half this week. So plenty of content from us. Maybe we shouldn't have talked about Breaking Bad for the first 10 minutes.
the listeners love us. What can I say? We give them what we want, what they want.
We think they do. Hopefully they do. Andy, where can you be reached on Twitter? What are you up to nowadays?
A. Anderson, FWFB. I'm going to be not playing in Trout this year, but I want to go visit. That'll be the first time. That'll be fun. I have my Gotham League draft coming up, which is exciting. Big names like Seth Trackman and Rob Leibowitz are going to be there. Shout out. So I'm excited to try my best not to look like an idiot to those guys. Please ask me questions. I'm always down to talk fantasy morning, noon, or night, whenever. So please reach out.
Yeah, I will probably be meeting you in New York, which will be fun. I'm definitely going to bring some type of protective gear because I don't know how rough you are in person. So we'll see how that goes. But
I'm the Walter White of half Latinos.
I'm definitely excited for Tab this week. A few of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits guys are going to be going up there, and we'll be helping out with a lot of the social media stuff, and you know, really just having a good old time up there, meeting a lot of experts in the quote unquote experts in the industry, and just really having a fun time watching everybody draft and helping out. So it'll be a lot of fun. It'll also be my first time meeting everybody, a lot of the people in the Friends with Fantasy Benefits group as well, like including Justin. Justin, I would say, is one of my closest friends that I have, and I've never met him in person. So it's kind of the modern day age of friendship / you know, being able to finally meet somebody. It's kind of a mix of emotions, but it's really exciting.
You need to get out more, Mike.
I would say that's a fact, yes. Mac, where can you be reached on Twitter, and what are you up to?
MDTopFWFB, and I'm kind of doing nothing right now for fantasy baseball. I'm updating my own ranks. Just had a couple of my big drafts this year. I think I only have one more draft this year, and it looks like I'm done, which is kind of sad because drafting and preparing for the baseball season is the absolute best part.
Oh, it's amazing.
But, other than that, MDTopFWFB.
I know that a lot of people will be drafting this weekend, and if you are, I hope that you're listening to all of our shows and reading our stuff on the site and all the rankings, especially if you're in Keeper Dynasty Leagues. Read Matt's Top 200 for prospects. It's absolutely one of the best tools out there, in my opinion, because it's all based on fantasy. It's not based on just defense or all-around baseball. So definitely use that as a guide if you're in a prospect draft or anything of the such this weekend. You can also reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. You can check out anything that I write on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. Again, our rankings and everything are up there as well. We have 5 shows a week. We have our main show that we just got done with Doug Dennis. We just got done with all of our position previews, and we just ended off with relief pitchers, which I know is the most exciting position, but having Doug Dennis on was really nice and gave us a lot of info for a position that usually is not very exciting. But also, check out my daily matchups column on baseballhq.com. Check out my stuff on Fantasy Pros as well. I think that wraps us up. So for Matt, Andy, and myself, thank you for listening, and good luck in your drafts. Every night